Welcome back to another week of the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board. We are here. We're happy. It's summer. Life is good. Hello, Jay.
Hello, Dave.
What's up?
Not too much. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Good. Yeah, it's been a real good week.
Yeah.
And it's going to just keep on going tonight.
Is it? It's going tonight.
It's
Let's do this.
It's on, Farrar.
Yeah.
We brought it, and it's on.
I got the sucky earphones here, I think.
Well, everybody gets a turn, right?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, man.
You got to pass them around.
Yeah.
Well, it's not
Can
like...
I bang them on the desk or something and see if the
Go
kicks
for
in?
It. Go yeah. for it.
Yeah. All right.
Do it. You're going to break them. I don't think that's helping, man. I think that might just be annoying to the listeners.
Okay, now I'm really going to do it.
Well, for the sake of everybody, including myself, can you not hear? Or are you reading lips?
No,
right
I can
now?
Hear
What's
you.
What's going on?
Man, if I could read lips right now, I'd be in a total different line of work. But
Well, we've got to get those fixed before our guests come on.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, I can hear you for now. It's just a little bit distorted, but hey. You sound good anyway,
That
Dave.
Could just be me, Jay.
That just could be you.
I think I've managed to pull off the distorted voice today. I saw a lot of music this week, so
were
the throat's
singing?
A little rough. Always.
You were singing Kaufman?
You stood next to me at Our Lady Peace. You know that
yeah,
can't
I
can't help
did.
Myself but sing at a concert.
Yeah, my left ear doesn't work anymore.
Actually, you know what, Jay? That happened to me this weekend. I went to a concert and left because it was too loud.
What?
First time in my life.
You're getting old.
I'm getting old. First time in my life. I looked over at my buddy and went, my ears are ringing. I need to go outside. That has never happened to me before.
Yeah.
Ever.
I think I've gone deaf from working in a pub for so long and seeing a lot of live shows and everything. I don't even feel feelings anymore.
Well, I'm looking at the you don't feel feelings.
I don't even feel feelings anymore.
I'm looking at the volume knob on the console here, and it's at max. And I think about the fact that I listen to music at full volume in my car and often listen to my iPod at full volume as well and think, boy, I need to fix this. But when you turn music up, you hear so much more.
Yes, that's
yes,
usually
yes.
what happens.
But I mean, you hear things that you know, you can hear the little things that make the production of the song that much better.
My earphones just kicked in.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the show is set now, ladies and
gentlemen.
We're
ready to go.
Jake and here. It's a miracle. We are ready to go. lots of guests tonight.
Yes, we've got a packed lineup tonight and some very interesting ones, too.
Yeah, I'm psyched. We've got Jay Onright.
Yeah.
Leading off. He'll be on in about 10 minutes' time. Checking in from the big TSN studios out in Scarborough.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah, I know. I wonder, well, John, when we had John Liu in studio,
yeah.
we asked him about Jay Onright.
Yeah.
And he said that he's exactly the same as he is on television.
But you can tell it's not a persona that he's putting on. Not like you
It'd
and me
a,
right now.
Oh, yeah. It'd be a tough persona to constantly.
No, you could tell. And especially during the Olympics, which
Man.
I'm going to ask him about.
Of course.
You could tell that he's being himself because when he was on the air for an extended period of time, you usually can catch if somebody's putting it on or not. This guy's a real deal, and I really, really enjoy his work.
The crack about the Teletubbies, I watched all that. I mean, I worked ungodly hours when I was working for the Olympics. I either worked from 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. or from 4 p.m. to 4 a.m.
Right.
So often I was watching the morning show, and yeah, dude just cracked me up.
Yeah, as soon as I got home from work, I would switch it on right away and be up a lot longer than I was supposed to be, but I couldn't help. I couldn't keep away. It was awesome.
After we speak with Jay, we're going to be joined once again by Dave Zirin.
Yeah, more laughter for
I'm
me.
So psyched.
Yeah.
We by far the best guest we've ever had on the show.
The most entertaining,
it
that's
was,
for sure.
It was only 2 weeks ago, and I really didn't think that we'd be able to get him back on so soon, but he wrote two fantastic articles today.
Yeah.
One in The Nation on Jerry Sandusky, one in Sports Illustrated. I think it came out yesterday, actually. His interview with Scott Fujita about Bountygate, and frankly, if you listen to Dave Zirin, Bountygate seems a little blown out of proportion.
Okay.
It seems like much ado about nothing, and the Saints are being really taken over the coals for this one. So we'll hear from Dave, and very excited to hear from Dave, as always. We've got, goodness, who else? We've got Dan Gradinsky coming into studio. We teased this at the end of the show last week. If you haven't heard last week's show, I do encourage you to go check out the archives, thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. We spoke with Ellis Valentine for over a half an hour. In fact, we talked baseball the entire show until the final segment where we teed up Dan Gradinsky coming on to talk about the death race. And that'll be at midnight. Very excited for that.
Is he still walking? Like, are we going to have to, like, I don't know, get a dolly or something downstairs to get him up the stairs?
I think his feet have finally recovered.
Good.
So, no, he was at the Útidur Brastronaut concert with me on Saturday night.
I'm sorry, the what?
That's right. We went to check out some Icelandic rock.
Okay. There's more Icelandic rock than Bjork?
Bjork?
Is Bjork. That how you say it? Okay.
I'm not too well versed.
What's the name of that band again?
Bjork.
No, I know Bjork.
Oh, I believe Bjork. It's Útidur.
Útidur.
Utditur. And there's like accent graves on the U's.
do they refer to them as accent graves
No,
as well?
I think that most people would laugh at me for calling it an accent grave. What is the English equivalent of that? What do you call it?
I don't know.
It's
ask one of the 9 people who live in Iceland. One of them will know.
I'm sure that there's an English translation for circumflex.
It's called a Útidur.
Aigu. It's called an Útidur.
Yeah, that's right.
It was that was some funky music. I'm you know me.
Is that the one you left where it was too loud? Or?
It was a little loud.
Okay.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. And the music was fantastic. I just found it a little on the loud side.
Okay.
But hey, again.
Getting old.
No, my own damn fault for listening to everything so loud.
Okay.
I need to fix this, considering I work a job where I have headphones on for a living.
Right.
I think this needs to be addressed.
Yes, me too, especially when they don't work.
We don't want to turn into
right now
to Pete Townsend. We've got also Olympic talk tonight. Olympics are a month away, Jay.
Yeah.
I know. It's just flying.
It's the biggest sporting event in the world. I guess we're going to have to talk about it at one point.
Oh, yeah. I really put a gun to my head and make me talk the Olympics.
I know. You love the Olympics. Kaufman loves the Olympics.
I do.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's the sporting equivalent of Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom, which premiered last night. It's that schmaltzy, feel good about yourself, feel good about your country crap. Okay. And I'm totally down. I'm
sponsored
sold.
By Coca-Cola or whatever.
Well, it used to be Kodak.
It's Kodak. What is it now?
Oh, goodness. We have such a smart audience. We don't normally take calls in the first segment, but we're going to go to Charlie in Pointe Claire. He's got an answer to my accent grave question.
Hello, Dave.
Charlie, is this Mr. Rabbit?
This is Mr. Rabbit.
Wow, Mr. Rabbit actually calling into a radio station. How are you, sir?
I'm actually calling in. I'm good. How are you, Dave? How
Great.
Are you, Jay?
Hey.
How's Jay doing?
I'm doing well.
Oh, you can hear now?
He can hear you perfectly, Charlie.
Just barely.
Perfect. Anyways, so it's a grave accent.
Of course it is.
And a sharp, I believe.
And a sharp.
Sharp.
Oh, wow.
I have no idea what circumflex is. You'd have to ask someone who actually speaks French.
Fair enough. Charlie, thank you, my friend. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. And enjoy talking on, right? I'm kind of jealous.
Really? Well, it'll be in 3.5 minutes' time, so you can know that you were the last person to speak to us before we spoke to Jay Onright.
All right.
Good night, Charlie.
Scratch that off your bucket list. And keep on going with that laptop, buddy. We're going to need you sometimes.
I'd never thought Charlie would call in. I thought he was just one of those ironic hipster Twitterers that... He could have done that over Twitter. We really appreciate
hearing
his voice.
Yeah, and actually, you know what? He tweeted me the other day, and he said he was going to the pub, and I didn't get a chance to get back to him. So sorry about that, Charlie.
It happens. Busy man, Mr. Farrar.
I'm around.
You were all over the place.
I'm all over the place.
You were.
I'm deaf right now, but I'm all over the place.
Great. Two deaf guys hosting a radio show. I know that makes people want to know what's going to happen next. This is The Kaufman Show. When we return, we will be joined by TSN's Jay Onright.
Give me some popcorn. Yeah, popcorn. Give me some popcorn. You've got to get a grip.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, coming in on a little Dave Bedini, one of our favorite guests we've had on. Our next guest, I don't think will swear like Dave Bedini swore. You know, it's a family thing, right? TSN, Bell Media.
Yes, there are so many families listening right now.
No,
oh, you mean you're talking about the, okay.
We're all in the big, happy
sure.
TSN, Bell Media, Globe, something or other, Dealey family. And, you know, as members of this extended family, it's always nice to welcome in another member of the TSN crew. Live in Scarborough at the TSN studios right now, getting ready to bring us our 1 a.m. version of SportsCenter. We've got Jay Onright on the show. Hello, Jay.
Hey, what's up?
How are you, man?
I'm great. Love the Dave Bedini. He's a good guy.
He's a very good guy. The godfather of Canadian indie rock, and the man sure knows his sports.
He sure does. He loves to write. He's a great writer. Love his books. And he's a cranky bastard, but we love him for that.
You know what, though, Jay? That kind of flies with our nighttime show. We
sure.
like the cranky bastards.
Yeah, our show, too. I mean, we're all cranky here, though I just gave away a whole the good folks at Molson Coors just sent me some Coors Light iced tea, and I just gave it away to the boys in the newsroom. So now they're really excited. They're all drunk. So it's going to be interesting to see how the highlights, how the scripts come through tonight.
Drunk off Coors Light. How much did you give them?
Well, Coors Light iced tea, not even Coors Light. So it's even more fancy-ish. Wait,
is that actually a thing, or are you just saying that because you feel like you can't say beer on our show?
No, it exists.
You really? Haven't heard of Coors Light iced tea?
I know. This is about to turn into the best commercial ever for Coors Light iced tea. Hit it.
Coors Light iced tea, the commercials are everywhere. It's the combination of delicious cold frost-brewed Coors Light and your favorite summertime beverage all in one weird and strange package that no one ever really asked for or wanted or wants now.
Jay, we're in Quebec. We drink alcohol here. So.
Oh, I understand, yeah. Right. Labatt Saint-Cont. I apologize.
Oh, my God. I haven't had a Labatt 50, I think, since the Olympic Stadium. That used to be the beer a long time ago at Expos games, but do they still do 50s, Jay? Can you get a 50 at your pub?
You can.
You could still get a good Labatt Saint-Cont. I'm sure you can.
Good. Now Molson nor Labatt are mad at us.
Good.
So, I wouldn't worry about it. They've got cash.
What?
So, Jay, I want to ask you, how on earth do you get away with being you on air?
Well, I suppose I could ask you guys the same thing.
Well, yeah, but our audience is a little smaller than yours, and our bosses don't know we're on right now. We actually just kidnapped the producer and stole some airtime.
You guys just wander in the studio and just wander. Yeah, no, that's cool. That's pretty much what we do, too. I don't know. You know, we have very sympathetic bosses, not just the Bell Media corporate family. I don't know if they know we exist, really, but our bosses at TSN are very, very cool with just letting us be us, and I think, you know, they realize that in letting us sort of be ourselves and have fun and make fun of the sponsors. I actually got in trouble with the good folks from Moxie's on Friday because I insinuated that they only let good-looking people into their restaurants just based by the commercials. I'm just going on the commercials. There's only attractive people in the commercials, so I assume that's the way the restaurants are. Got in a little trouble with the Moxie's people, so I have to apologize to them tomorrow. But at the same time, look at this. We're just giving them a free advertisement right now.
That's right. I think you just covered that apology. It's coast to coast now. You're covered.
Everyone loves Moxie's. No, I love what I do. It's the job I always wanted to do, and I get a lot of love for Montreal too. I try to get to Montreal at least once a year, and I come hang out, and I go to Joe Beef, and I go to Au Pied de Cochon, and people are very kind to me, and they tell me they like the way I read the sports news in English, and that's good. That's all I need to hear. It's a very rewarding gig. And it's a lot of fun. So I'm a happy, happy person.
How is your ability to read the sports news in French, Jay?
Petit peu.
I think that's the first thing they learn in Ontario in school.
Yeah, right.
Are those two words.
That's it.
Petit peu, really?
Yeah. Just to get them ready when they come to Montreal.
I thought it was right. Labatt Saint-Cont.
Oh, that's true. You learn that. Yeah, you learn that at 18 because, you know, the drinking age, we all head over there early. So
that's right.
Though I'm from Alberta, where the drinking age is also 18. I feel like Albertans and Quebecers are kindred spirits.
Oh, yeah. We've got tons in common.
We do. We're the renegades. We're the ones that are always threatening to leave Confederation.
That is true. I always got the impression that there was a hatred on since Trudeau.
Well, I don't think that Albertans associate, you know, Trudeau's policies in the 70s with all of Quebecers. I mean, we're not going to generalize like that. Quebec is one of my favorite provinces in the entire country, and I sincerely mean that. I've not gone to Quebec and not had an amazing, amazing time.
Well, you're busting stereotypes for us as well. I had honestly used to think that every Albertan was like Jerome Iginla.
Right.
And it's nice to know.
Good. I'm glad.
Jay, are you off to London?
I am. I am going to London. I'll be hosting our Sports Center hits there. We'll be doing highlights from Trafalgar Square near Canada House. So that'll be kind of fun. And Dan will be hosting from here. And so I'll have some witty banter from across the pond that I'm sure will be met with a 7-second delay that will make it look awkward and weird. So I'll definitely want everyone to tune in for that. It should be awkward and fun.
Are you going to be doing the Canada AM thing again?
No. Wasn't asked back for that.
And that leads me right to my next question, because I get home 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning from where I work, and I used to stay up just to watch you. I really had the impression that they had no idea what to do with you during that show.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's in a way, it was sort of like there was no. Obviously, there was sort of no set guideline because the weird thing about that show is there was no events on, so I didn't understand what we were supposed to be doing, to be honest. And so we just kind of had to make TV up for 6 hours. So that's what we did, and some of it was good, some of it was bad, but I've never received more positive feedback about anything I've done in my career than I have for those 2 weeks. So, so obviously some people enjoyed it, but I guess CTV just decided they wanted to go a different direction, and that's cool. I think another thing that's different about London compared to Vancouver is that, you know, Vancouver, obviously there were no events going on from 3 a.m. to 9 a.m., but now there will be events, obviously, starting at 6 a.m. our time, so 6 a.m. Eastern time, so it's not going to be the same style of show anyway. It's going to be, you know, anchors from London just throwing to live events in the morning. So you'll wake up in the morning, you'll actually get to see actual Olympic events. So that's kind of cool too, I guess. I'm trying to be very diplomatic.
Yes, and you're doing a great job.
It was just as entertaining with you, believe me. It was brilliant. It was brilliant.
Thanks.
I think Bev Thompson couldn't handle it anymore.
No, Bev was great. You know, everyone asked me about that. And, you know, the first maybe couple of days, I think she was confused as to what was going on. But, Bev was really just I sincerely mean this, just a wonderful lady and a great broadcaster. And she got on board very quickly because I think she was equally confused as to what we were doing and what we were supposed to be doing. So we bonded. We bonded over that whole situation. And we remain great friends to this day.
Jay, I know you've got to write a show and present it to all of us in Canada in about 90 minutes time. But can you give us a little teaser what to expect tonight?
Yeah, we have some fun stuff tonight. Dan, I encourage everyone to make sure they tune into Dan's top 10 introduction tonight. It's the top 10 cheeky goals based on Andrea Pirlo's shootout goal.
What a beautiful goal that was.
I thought it was a spectacular goal, but some people thought maybe it was a little cheeky, so we decided to put together the top 10 cheeky goals. So Dan has done an intro, and I can't go into too much detail. Let's say it has something to do with an experience he had going through security at the airport, and I'll just leave it at that.
Jay Onright, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time, and we love what you do. Keep doing it, and we'll keep watching.
It's a pleasure. Have a great night, guys.
All the best. There he goes, Jay Onright from TSN.
I once tweeted, move over Stephen Colbert, we now have the funniest man on television. Just great stuff. He thinks outside the ball, and the chemistry with him and Dan O'Toole's incredible.
One of my favorite experiences was putting up a YouTube video of his greatest hits, if you will.
Yes.
And seeing the reaction from my American friends.
Right.
Who are so used to the straight man reading.
They have no
sports
idea.
News.
Yeah.
And I mean, SportsCenter ER versus SportsCenter RE, it's day and night.
Right.
So it was great to talk to Jay, and yeah, we're big fans, and it's always nice to be able to talk to somebody that you admire.
Definitely.
Jimmy, I admire you, and I want you to bring us up to commercial with some beautiful music. Yeah, we'll take that.
Are you going to sing, Dave?
I always sing, Jay. This is the Kaufman Show. The summer's killing us. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar.
Finally, you play a song that I know. That's good. Thanks.
Yeah, you heard this one before?
I have. High school.
My God. Jay, you ready for our next guest?
Yeah, the question is the world ready? Because the last time he was on, I couldn't contain myself.
Well, a lot of people have had their chance lately. Dave Zirin has been all over the news. He was on Outside the Lines today, yelling over other people.
Good.
On ESPN.
Good.
And I believe was on with our sister station in Toronto as well. And yeah, 2 weeks ago, when I said we're wrapping up right now with Dave Zirin, Jay went, "Do we have to?" No. So we're really happy to have him back. And he's got two brilliant articles out this week, one in The Nation, of which he is the sports editor, and one in Sports Illustrated, which we're all very familiar with. Let's welcome back Dave Zirin to the program. Hey, Dave.
Hey, it's great to be on the show. First of all, before we say anything, I figure we're all like family now. I should tell you that the last name is pronounced Zirin, like fire siren with a Z.
Zirin.
But don't worry about it. My mom mispronounces it, so it's not that big a deal.
Is that a New York thing? Like, I feel like...
It was like a six-syllable Russian name that got chopped at Ellis Island when my dumbass grandfather made his way across the waters. And they just took the long name and said, "Yeah, you're Zirin now." And he said, "You know what? Fangu, fine. I'm going on to Brooklyn and we'll call it a day." So there's that. And the other thing that I absolutely have to tell you and make perfectly clear before we start is that Sabotage is my jam, so I'm just excited right now.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'm just like, that was playing, I was like moshing. I woke up my four-year-old son just to knock him back into bed. That's how excited I got when I was hearing that song.
Well, first of all, I apologize for mispronouncing your name, and I'll tell you, I heard you on Sam Sater's show this week and thought to myself, either he's saying it wrong or I'm saying it wrong, but we'll find out this week.
Yeah, Sam Cedar doesn't know how to pronounce anybody's name.
There you go. I don't know how to pronounce his name either. I made him sound a lot more Jewish than he might actually be.
Sam Cedar.
And second of all, when my family went through Ellis Island, I'm pretty sure that Kaufman was the people in front of them and that the guards could not pronounce whatever it was. But between the mom being a Deckel bomb and the father being, they really don't know. Like they
still don't know what it is.
They fully are like, yeah, Kaufman was not the name in Russia or Poland or Ukraine or whatever it is. So, yes, it's the Americanization, and we are live with Dave Zirin. on the Kaufman
Show.
Sound
the sirens.
Dave, like fire siren with a Z.
Done. It will not. The mistake will not be made again. I promise you, Dave. Let's start with. Well, you know what? Both articles actually were pretty heavy this week, but let's start with the one from The Nation. Sandusky. Now, obviously, this was big news last week when he was found guilty on, I think it was 45 or 46 of the 48 counts. Now, you looked at it from another side this week.
Oh, absolutely. Look, these United States of America that I live in here, the people in this country, we're very good at slaying monsters. We're very good at going after Frankenstein's monster. We're very good at lighting up the torches and making a big to-do when the monster goes down. Sometimes we're a little iffy on whether the monster is innocent or guilty, but innocent or guilty, if you want to find a hanging party somewhere in this world, the United States is a good place to start. Now, how about going after Dr. Frankenstein, though, the person who created the monster? How about going after the person who made the order down the chain of command that eventually got to Abu Ghraib? How about going after the person who allows the monster to roam the countryside? That we're not so good about. Not at all. And what I wrote about was about somebody who's really not being discussed nearly enough, and that's the governor of the state of Pennsylvania, the most powerful person in what's called a battleground state. Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, they're both, you know, in an ass-kissing contest to see who can pucker up for this guy most. Centrist Republican named Tom Corbett. Now, Tom Corbett's got something else that people should know about in his history, and that's that he was the Attorney General of the state of Pennsylvania. Law enforcement in Pennsylvania knew about Jerry Sandusky and accusations against him going back to 1995, for goodness sakes. I mean, that was Juwan Howard's rookie year. That's how long ago that was. And then fast forward to 2009, that is when Governor Corbett actually empowered a state trooper to go after Jerry Sandusky. One state trooper, nobody from his office, nobody from arresting powers, just a state trooper. And that's all he put forward on the Sandusky case for 2 years. And then when it looked like the case was going to blow up, he went into a totally different mode, which was, and this has been verified by people on the Board of Trustees at Penn State, which was, how do we push as much responsibility as possible onto Graham Spanier, who is not only the president of Penn State University, but also a political opponent of Tom Corbett, and how to put it on Joe Paterno, the, you know, infirm, pushing 90-year-old coach with one foot out the door anyway. And, I mean, these are actions that he has not had to answer for. And, look, I'm all for Graham Spanier having to answer for his BS. And, frankly, I think Joe Paterno as well, as he said in the last interview of his life, has a lot to be sorry about in terms of what he did or didn't do regarding Jerry Sandusky. Mm-hmm. But the idea that Tom Corbett gets to now preen in front of the cameras as if he is somehow the grand protector of children, I mean, this is garbage. This is garbage, and people need to stand up and know what this is about, because honestly, if the people of Pennsylvania don't stand up and demand answers, at worst case scenario, Tom Corbett's going to write a book and end up doing his cycle on The Tonight Show and The Daily Show about everything he did to take down the monster Sandusky, and that's garbage. All that does is guarantee that more monsters in the future will roam the countryside.
14 years in between the moment where he supposedly gained knowledge of this and then he put one cop on the case?
That's right. That's 14 insane. Years before it became something that people talked about, and much longer than 14 if you want to take it to people in Penn State beginning to say something is kind of off about what's going on here. And people don't want to put too fine a point on it, but because people in power were so concerned about protecting the reputation of the football program and the reputation of Penn State University, which people got to understand is like the multi-billion dollar economic engine of an entire region of central Pennsylvania, where otherwise there would not be an economy in central Pennsylvania. Because of that, more children were raped. I mean, this is indisputable. This is what we know. And so the question then becomes, is anybody actually going to have to pay accounts for this? Or are we just going to pat ourselves on the back because we took down? I mean, it's crazy to think about it like this, but in this whole drama, Sandusky is the easiest target. And the question is, it's easy to go after the malignancy, that is that kind of evil that is Jerry Sandusky. It's a lot harder to go after the banality of evil. It's a lot harder to go after, you know, the people who, because of their own ambition or bureaucratic inertia, allowed more kids to get hurt.
We're in conversation with Dave Zirin from Edge of Sports. We're talking about his new article in The Nation on Jerry Sandusky. Dave, has Penn State been affected financially by this? Have people, less people signed up for school there? Have they gotten less donations from this? Or is it still the same powerhouse that it was?
No, nothing as yet. I mean, the football program obviously has suffered for this. But at the same time, I mean, isn't it interesting? And we're entering some serious conjecture land here. So far, everything I've said to you and to your audience has been stone cold fact. I'm about to enter into the land of conjecture, be straight up about that. I think it's very, very interesting and very curious that the same week this verdict comes down is the same week that we're going to have big news tomorrow about that, the fact that the BCS is going to expand and be a playoff.
Right.
And who was the person who had to buckle to make that happen? It was Jim Delaney, who's the president of which conference? The Big Ten. And he was the hard ass. He was the guy saying, no, sanctity of the sport. I don't care what the SEC says. The Big Ten's going to hold out to keep the BCS, what have you. I mean, he was basically standing in the way of an expansion of profit for, and fan interest as well, in the name of college football. And here's his conference, one of the marquee teams of his conference, could have been mortally wounded by the Sandusky thing. And this is a way to keep Penn State football chugging along. When I look at this, and I think, frankly, any sane person who's not wearing the Nittany Lion colors would look at this and say, wow. So Southern Methodist University gets the death penalty in 1987 for payouts of $10,000, $15,000 to players. And by the way, that's how much Urban Meyer makes every time he's going to sneeze on the Ohio State sideline this year. But $10,000, $15,000, oh, heaven forfend, shut down SMU. Pony Express must go. And then here is Penn State. No one in the NCAA is even whispering about the fact that maybe, just maybe, the football program had grown so powerful that they let Sandusky do whatever he had to do, that the football program completely smiled and nodded, even after everybody knew what Mike McQueary saw in that shower, and let Jerry Sandusky hang out on the sideline holding hands with little kids. I mean, as recently as a couple of years ago, as recently as, like, what was it, 7 months ago, Jerry Sandusky's working out in the gym at Penn State in the very locker room and taking a shower in the very shower that Mike McQueary walked in on him on. And nobody is saying, geez, maybe this football program needs to take a break. I mean, far from that, Jim Delaney has worked and has made a deal to actually make the football programs of the Big Ten actually increase in power. And that, to me, I mean, is sick. I mean, you just look at NCAA football. I'm a huge sports fan. I wrote about this last year. That's the second most popular sport in the United States is college football. I'm done with it. Sometimes something gets too ugly, too disgusting, that you just have to say, I can't look at this anymore. And that's college football to me.
I feel like we had a similar conversation a couple of weeks ago about boxing.
I could see why one would have that conversation about boxing. I mean, there are, and I know that there are a lot of families that are having this discussion about either their kids playing football because of head injuries or about the NFL itself, given some of the lawsuits that are coming up. And I got to say, you know, that's the people's right. The people, this is one of the things that drives me nuts about the NFL and this whole Bountygate thing, is that there is such an effort by the National Football League and Roger Goodell to CYA to cover their ass and to not speak about some of the actual repercussions of playing professional football, and like, heaven forbid that anybody see the sport as anything other than completely fan-friendly and family-friendly. And so the effort to try to cover that up, I think, is at the heart of these bounty investigations. And I think people, I really do believe this. I'm not somebody who thinks, like, well, we should just ban it or what have you. But I am somebody who thinks that people have the right to know the facts as far as, like, how dangerous are these sports, what are the effects of these sports, so people can make informed decisions.
From the sanctity of college football to the sanctity of the National Football League, you had an interview. You spoke with Scott Fujita on your radio program this week, and the transcript is in Sports Illustrated right now. Very interesting conversation, which sort of makes Bountygate seem like it shouldn't be augmented by the league to the way that it has been.
No, that's right. I mean, this is, one of the things we were talking about today on Outside the Lines. I mean, there is a Grand Canyon gap between the flashy headlines, between bounty, pay to injure program discovered, Greg Williams, look at his slideshows and how naughty they are. Like, oh my God, an NFL assistant coach is a vulgarian in the locker room. Someone called the 11 o'clock news. But like, there's a huge gap.
They did.
there's a huge gap between that and when you actually peel away the headlines, what you actually see, what's been admitted to, what people have testified to, and what I see, what the argument that Scott Fujita is making, the argument that Anthony Hargrove, Will Smith, Jonathan Vilma, is that they had a pay-to-perform pool. And pay-to-perform is different than pay-to-injure. Pay-to-perform, by the way, is illegal. I mean, it's against NFL rules, I should say. It might even be against the law in terms of the IRS. It might circumvent the salary cap. There are all kinds of problems that are suspension-worthy, et cetera, et cetera. The difference is if you hang somebody out to dry for pay-to-perform, which, by the way, Scott Fujita has admitted to, you're not affecting their ability to, like, find employment after they're done playing in the NFL. You're not branding their reputation as being the kind of person who tries to hurt their fellow NFL players, which for someone like Scott Fujita, who's on the union's executive committee and is a leader on issues of player safety, is a particularly devastating charge, especially when he's working with his friend Steve Gleason day in, day out, who has ALS, which is not proven, but it can't. It's possible that it's something that comes through the kind of head injuries that people receive in the National Football League. So you're talking about like something that the NFL has gone out of its way to blow this up into something bigger than it is. And then the question becomes why? Why would they possibly want to do this? Why would they want to damage one of their most treasured brands, the New Orleans Saints? And here's where you get to the issue that I brought up today on television. And I mean, I don't know what the reaction was. No one responded when I said it, but I'm glad I said it just to put it out there. I mean, the NFL is facing the largest class action lawsuit in the history of professional sports. History. Anywhere on earth. And it's the 2,000 former players who are suing the National Football League for hiding information about head injuries. Now, the NFL, when this massive mega class action lawsuit, when it was filed, they put out their own press release that cited the New Orleans Saints bounty gate and how aggressive they're being to punish players to say, what do you mean we don't care about player safety? Of course we care about player safety. Look how hard we're being on the New Orleans Saints. So to me, this is total shuck and jive, total PR.
Wow. Such a deflection.
Total, we're sending a message to the judiciary. Yeah, because if they cared about player safety that much, why do they still want the season to be 18 games? Why are they locking out the NFL referees right now? They're hiring refs who are like high school refs, Division III refs. These are the people they are training to do NFL games this year. And they're leaving out like a little fact, which is that because of all the concern about concussions over the last 2 years, NFL referees have gotten a ton of trainings about like how to identify when a player, you know, based on like their pupils, how dilated they are, how they're blinking their eyelids, like whether or not they need to be taken out of a game immediately or not. So for them to be say, we care about player safety, but then they're not going to, I mean, think how much an NFL ref makes. I mean, we're hardly talking about my Alex Rodriguez numbers here. I mean, it is a pittance compared to what a typical game check is for even a minor NFL player. Like your backup safety on the training squad is not going to make as much. It's going to make more, I should say, than an NFL referee. And yet they're playing hardball with them at the expense of players' health. That's why I really do believe, like what one player said to me is he said, like, I'll believe that Goodell and the owners are serious about player safety when I start to see it in their pocketbook.
Well, these are guys with day jobs, Dave. Like most refs are, you know, they're school teachers or they're accountants or wherever, and they fly to the game on Sunday and they fly out.
Mm-hmm.
It's
they're insurance salesmen. It's not a 7 day a week job. They just they were up for negotiations, and the league decided to play hardball.
Dave, what can we expect to find on your various websites this week?
Oh, geez. well, first of all, I'm going to be doing a reenactment of the film Human Centipede.
Here we go.
I know.
I knew Human Centipede would fit. Yeah, it would figure it out at some point.
Somewhere. But But I'm not going to actually do it with other humans, just with various household appliances. So it's going to be very exciting and be there as a live action Vimeo feature.
Oh, good.
That people can, it'll be interactive as well. No, this is all very disgusting and unnecessary. this is pretty much what I'm going to be working on all week here. I mean, I want to keep pounding away at the Penn State issue. I want to talk about the idea about why there isn't some sort of break that the football team is being asked to take over the next year. And, you know, I just feel fortunate to be able to talk about this stuff, because I feel like too much these are discussions that people don't want to have, because there's so much in sports media that's just about, like, keeping the trains running on time and not enough taking a step backwards and saying, well, we've built this amazing empire of sports and entertainment, but where's the sort of social accountability in all this?
Always room for those kinds of conversations on our show. Dave Zirin from The Nation, from Edge of Sports, Sports Illustrated. Keep fighting the good fight, man. We'll keep paying attention.
Can I tell you a joke before I go?
Of course.
This is very serious.
Of course.
All right. What's the last thing you ever want to hear when giving oral pleasures to Willie Nelson?
What?
I'm not Willie Nelson.
Dave Zirin doesn't say that on ESPN at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, eh? Dave, thanks so much for your time, and we'll catch you real soon.
It's actually funnier the more you think about it, but I'll let you go.
We'll sit on it. We'll sit on it.
I'll be thinking about that all night, Dave, so don't worry about it.
I'm sorry? And we lost him. Okay,
you said have a good one.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay, yes. I missed it.
Yeah, earphones are working now.
Yeah, they're barely. Yeah. It was great to have Dave Zirin on. Told you in the elevator up that I screwed up his name last week.
We were kind of debating on that, but well, now we know.
He seems to still like us. So
yeah, when he comes on next time, we'll play the Beastie Boys and put a siren in the background for Zirin.
We can just play that part in Sabotage. Hey, Jimmy, is that still up on the thing? No, it's lost. All right. That's fine. Well, anyway. that's okay. I like the song that we said we're going to end on, because we finished talking about the Bounty Gate. And, nothing says Bounty Gate quite like this. This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Olympics. Woohoo!
Yeah, that's more like it! Ho-ho! Woo! Oh, I won! To be in that rumba, find a chance over there. Oh, over there!
I saw it written and I saw it say, Bingo Moon.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board, John Kakalakis helping us out. We've got Dan Gradinsky around the corner, but first we're going to talk a little bit of Olympics.
We got Dan Gradinsky in the corner, right now.
He's actually in the corner.
Literally.
Kaufman Show legal analyst Dan Gradinsky, who competed in the Pittsfield, Vermont death race last weekend. If you're curious about it, go to youmaydie.com.
Just glad to see he's still alive.
Happy
to see him.
Thank God. Yeah. Thank God. Let's shift gears, though, to the Olympics, which is my favorite sporting event. And today, Canoe Kayak Canada announced the canoe and kayak teams for the Olympics. And it was a nice ceremony down by the Lachine Canal at the Lachine Canoe Club. And all of the athletes were there. They received their Olympic jackets, official Olympic jackets, which are sweet, by the way. Totally wanted one.
You getting one?
No, I don't know how I can scan that. I can't kayak or canoe.
Well, they're going to sell them, aren't they? Well, they'll be there.
Once they sell them.
Where they at the bay or whatever?
That is usually where they sell them. Yeah. And it's a beautiful black uniform. Just looked gorgeous. And, yeah, got to see all the athletes and everybody just, you know, so psyched for it's a month away. I can't believe it's a month away. And got to have a nice chat with Mark DeJong, who has qualified for the K1 200 meter, which is a new event in London 2012. And he recorded a time this weekend. He had a race off against another competitor, and the winner of this two-person race got to go to the Olympics.
Wow.
And his time was, I believe, one of the fastest ever recorded for the 200. Again, it's a new sport, but all that says is that Mark is a favorite for the London Olympics. Here comes my conversation with Mark this afternoon. So with Mark DeJong from Team Canada, tell me about your feelings from today.
Today was great. It's I found that after the win, everything just started happening so quickly. So it's the moments are kind of fleeting, and I'm just trying to soak it all in while I can. But today was a good day having the jacket on, and it just feels great to finally call myself an Olympian.
You recorded the fastest ever time in the 200 this weekend?
Yeah, as far as I know, I think it's not really an official record, but they do keep track of these things in some form. So it's really good to know that I'm faster than that, and it's far beyond what I've ever done before. So it's a really good feeling going into the games.
How does that add to the weight of the expectations?
I think it's all just about trying to do what I know that I can do on the day. And like, I had expectations coming into this regatta, and there's a lot of pressure, but you just have to manage it properly.
Can you explain your average training day, or what has led up to these games for you?
Yeah, so we get up and paddle at 8, and 8 to about 9:30 or 10, and then we paddle again at 11:30, do weights or a run in the afternoon. It's pretty much that for 6 days straight, and then we have Sundays off to recover.
For how long?
That's been going on for 2 years now. So yeah, it's been just nose to the grindstone for a while.
Can you talk a bit about the difference of a professional athlete versus an amateur? Obviously, we spend a lot of time on our station covering professional athletes, and I'd imagine that as somebody who's, you know, your spot on this team was not guaranteed until this weekend, and you've been putting in hours upon hours upon hours. What is that like?
I think that the amateur athletes are essentially professional athletes at this point, but yeah, we don't have that comfort knowing that we have a lot of money coming in, or knowing that we're going to be going to a certain event. So I find that it's a lot of pressure, but I don't know, I kind of like the pressure and just having to really have to perform on the day and get it done.
Is something like own the podium a motivational factor for you, or does it go much deeper than that?
Oh, yeah, they're a motivating factor, but it goes deeper than that. It's I have a lot of internal motivation other than just trying to pay the bills and sort of make a living doing the sport. It's more about just the feeling I get from competing and knowing that all those hours I put in were worth it.
What are you expecting when you get to London?
I'm expecting to have a similar performance that I had this weekend. I had the race of my life yesterday, and I know that I can do that under pressure now. So if I can just do that again, I'll be really happy.
Best of luck to you. We'll be watching.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Team Canada, Mark DeJong. We'll all be watching. Can't wait. And now that we know that Enright's going to be there, it's going to be even better.
Yes, he will, and there'll be actually events while he's doing his show.
Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We wish all the greatest of successes to the Canadian canoers, kayakers, and hell, everybody else. Let's own that podium. This is the Kaufman Show. We're going to really shift gears when we get back. We're going to speak with Dan Gradinsky, but not about law. We will not be bringing him in on the Law and Order theme this time. No night court. We're going to talk about the death race. Trust me, it's crazy stuff. Thank you. some kind of ventilator. Welcome back to the Kauffman Show. Dave Kauffman, Jay Farrar. And we're now joined by Dan Gradinsky, the Kauffman Show legal analyst from the firm of Borden, Ladner, and Gervais, but not tonight. Hi, Dan.
Good evening, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you in studio.
Yeah, it's a little change of pace.
Nice to have you breathing.
That was the goal.
Still amongst us.
That's right. That's right.
The first time, Dan, that Jay and I ever shared a radio studio together was we filled in for one of Matthew Ross's Game Point shows. And this was around this time last year. We had you on. You had just competed in the death race. And, well, first of all, you blew Jay's mind. Jay had no idea what to. He went on the website, youmaydie.com, and just watching his face while we had you over the phone that day. Now, we were all very proud of you. You lasted 25 hours at last year's death race.
About 24, yeah.
This year, you finished it.
I did.
And lasted?
61 hours, straight
Jesus
hours.
Christ. How are you, man? Well, you okay?
About a week later, I'm happy to say that I am still breathing. I'm walking a little more tired than I was about a week and a half ago, but altogether pretty good.
How are your feet?
My feet were covered in these massive blisters, but happily they're getting back to normal. And even the feeling is back now, too, which is a nice thing.
Well, that's good.
It's all about getting the feeling back.
The gangrene didn't set in or anything?
That's
good.
Right. I was able to cut it off at the pass. So,
I brought you in studio tonight, Dan, because I wanted to spend a little bit of time on this, and I didn't think it would come across as well if we had you over the phone, but I'd like you to describe in a bit of detail what those 61 hours consisted of, because
sure.
I don't think people can comprehend now. I'll be honest with you. I would not have been able to understand what you went through had I not driven down there and seen it myself. Yeah. These people are nuts. And I wondered if everybody looked at me with this look like, oh yeah, this guy totally thinks we're nuts. Because the whole time I'm just like, all of you are crazy. Yes. What drives you to do this?
It's a good question.
I've asked like 8 questions in a row here. You better just talk.
Maybe something. The best way to do it is just to start with what the death race is. And, you know, the organizers of these two guys with a long list of achievements under their belts for having run a variety of endurance races, the Iditarod in Alaska, Triple Ironmans, all sorts of climbed a whole stack of mountains. And what they did is they wanted to set out to put together a race that wasn't going to pat you on the back. Wasn't going to just tell you, yeah, great job, good for trying anyways, and you know, they'll guide you along the way. What it is very simple. You don't know when you're going to start. You don't know when you're going to finish. You don't know what you're going to do. Essentially, it's a metaphor for life is what they're shooting for. So what it is it's set in Pittsfield, Vermont, a beautiful, nice town, and any other weekend would be filled with normal, sane people. That last weekend, essentially what you had is about 300, a little less than 350 people show up, all signed, ready to go, and all signed this funny waiver, basically saying, yeah, I'm aware that I might die, I might get injured, I might get attacked by a bear, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they get you started. So what did we do this year? We started by crawling through a culvert, I think it was about 60-odd meters or so, which is just a nice little intro. Then you've got your pack. Your pack normally has to have your required gear, which this year included everything from an axe, a pink swimming cap, a life vest, a bag of human hair, actually, some matches, I think.
A bag of human hair.
A bag of human hair.
What's the deal with that?
Well, we actually found out that really, apparently human hair is the best way to keep deer off your property. And this was just the cheapest way for the organizers to get a whole stack of human hair together. And cover their property. Yeah.
Was this human hair taken from some of the people who are participated in last year's race who didn't make it, or is it?
Basically, yeah. It was either.
It is. Yeah.
It was
we have this left over.
Yeah,
by the
exactly.
Way. Yeah.
Either leftover bodies, or in my case, surprisingly, when you go into a barbershop and say, "Hey, can I have a bag of human hair?" They don't look at you with nearly the fright that I would have expected.
Yeah, sure. Here you go. Oh, yeah. Scaring deer away, are we?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I know. I guess it's a normal thing. So anyways, we got started. Then they said, okay, split yourselves up into groups and grab a kayak. And normally people would say, okay, grab a kayak. That's pretty easy. But what they wanted us to do is hold it over our heads and climb over a mountain pretty much overnight. So we covered something like 15-odd kilometers for the first couple hours. It quite literally never got below your shoulders. You're carrying it with a couple other people. Then we stopped for a little while to do a couple hundred burpees. I don't know if you you guys are familiar with what that is, but you drop to the ground, do a quick push-up, and then jump back in the air.
Army-style push-up.
Yeah, exactly. One of those gets somewhat tiring. You do a couple hundred of those, and it's even worse.
Everybody at home, you following along? Are you tired yet?
I'd do one of those, and then you'd be clipping my hair for next year's event.
Well, people are already dropping at this point along the way.
How far into it are you at this point?
At this point, we're we've started probably late afternoon, probably around 4 o'clock or something like that. It's now about midnight, thereabouts.
Okay, so you're 8 hours deep.
About right.
Okay.
And what the theme for this year's race was betrayal.
Of course it was.
Ooh. Betrayal.
Of course it was.
So the idea was very simply they were going to lie to you. They told you straight up, don't believe a word we say. We're going to take you out of your comfort zone. So they took us basically, rather than returning back to the base camp and you could load up on fuel and water, food, all that sort of stuff, get a new change of clothes, we went out. And, I mean, that means that we weren't going to return back. We didn't know this, but weren't going to come back to the farm for a good 30-odd hours.
So how much did you have enough water for half of that time?
No, but happily, there were some other people had iodine tablets, so we were able to get new water. But you start sharing power bars and rationing it off, and it was pretty funny. But at the same time, you end up, you know, bonding with people where, hey, yeah, okay, sure, I'll give you half of my last, energy bar or whatever it is. And you start seeing bonds between people where it's not quite so competitive as saying, hey, we're going through a shared experience. The phrase embrace the suck is often used, saying this is going to be awful, but we're going to enjoy it. So
talking about Willie Nelson again, aren't we?
There we go, yeah. I knew he'd come back.
That's right. So anyway, so around morning we stopped, did another stack of burpees.
And just to be clear, you didn't sleep, right?
No. You're not going to sleep for 61 straight hours. Then we got to someone's property where they said, well, listen, we want to do a good turn for him. So all of you people are going to grab buckets of gravel and start graveling his long, long, long country driveway, which we did for a couple hours. And that's, you know, not easy work in the blazing sun. But you know, it was good to do a good turn for someone.
All right. So I'm exhausted. I'm done. I'm out of the race at this point. I'm driving back to Montreal.
Now we're around midnight. Sorry, it's about noon now. So we've been going for
almost 24 hours.
Close to it, yeah. A little shy of 24 hours. We started hiking.
Are you of sane mind at that point? I mean, obviously we know you're crazy to be doing this in the first place, but you know what I mean? Like, is your brain fully functional at that point?
At noon, I am. About 2 hours later, after a lot more hiking, we stopped to do a 200-question multiple choice test involving math, etymology, cell formation, and then all you found is, you had all sorts of other details about what other bugs or bacteria can kill you out in the middle of the wild and in the various lakes that you'll otherwise be swimming in. So it's a psychological test at the same time. The moment I sat down, by the way, I promptly fell asleep and then, you know, shook myself awake and got back to writing this very complicated, coded 200-question multiple choice test. So at that point, my thinking wasn't as good as it could have been, but...
Is there like a threshold that you're not allowed to get below on the test, or you have another challenge to do? I'm imagining that get pretty nasty about this.
That was basically it, but you don't know when it's going to come back to bite you.
Wonderful.
So I really...
Betrayal.
Yeah, exactly. So you assume that you're putting all this effort into it and it's, you know, somehow going to reward you. At the end of the day, at the end of the race, no, it didn't. They kind of just said, screw it. You just ended up wasting your time. So congratulations.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, so we're about halfway through right now.
That's right. We're about halfway through.
What point do I see you? Oh, it's still another day away,
isn't
it? We're
now on Saturday. You've got a full day before we. Before I see your happy, smiling face by a river.
Okay.
So after that, we basically ended up hiking up to the top of a mountain, carry a bit more gravel along the way. Then last year, Pittsfield, Vermont got hit by Hurricane Irene, which is that awful hurricane that
just missed
Vermont.
Montreal.
Yeah. By the way, the town got destroyed, but it's being rebuilt quite nicely. But what they did is
bring up your human hair, and soon the town will be fixed.
Well, close enough. They basically saved all the ugliest, gnarliest, knotted logs for us, figuring we couldn't chop them. We figure you idiots will be able to do so. And they say set us loose on logs that were basically close to the size of a car. I mean, you were just hacking away at these things for hours and hours and hours until you split it and quartered it into nice firewood. Promptly took all you possibly could in your backpack and a bucket on the side and carried it over the mountain back to the farm, where I was able to, for the first time in a day, get myself some, you know, some food and some a little bit of water, change my clothes and whatnot. So,
well, isn't that nice of them? What about a little bit of deodorant or
deodorant?
No, point?
No. By the way, it was only after the second day you realize, whew, this is ripe. This is ripe.
That would have been after my first burpee.
we're talking about the death race. YouMayDie.com is the website. This is known as the most difficult long endurance race in the world. It incorporates both your body and your mind. And our guest, Dan Gradinsky, has regained his body, but obviously lost his mind. We're about halfway through his 60-hour ordeal right now.
That's right. So now it's we're coming around to morning. We've done a whole bunch of hiking. We've covered, at this point, about 50-odd miles or so, most of the time carrying these heavy objects. And I get to the bottom of basically a nice little house by a river, and you see another set of these ugly, ugly logs. And they say, here we go. Grab this really big log, carry it up to the top of the mountain, learn how to make an origami paper crane.
Sure.
Yeah, why not, right? So there's some instructions along the way.
It's Blade Runner all of a sudden.
Come back to the bottom and make it, you know, make it perfectly. Otherwise, you're going right back up.
Oh, my God.
So but the great thing is that they the instructions that they had up on the trail, so after you're sweating buckets, you're carrying this thing that's got to be like 120, 130 pounds. It's just this awful log. And you're trying to figure out how to make an origami paper crane, which unfortunately it's been a little while since my last arts and crafts class.
But, right.
You know, and I haven't been to Japan anytime recently, so my two chances of being able to do this otherwise. So they basically skipped a couple of instructions along the way. They did this purposely, so you had to figure out exactly how to make an origami crane. An approximation of it is what I got, something that kind of looks like a bird, but nonetheless it was sufficient and we were on our way.
Okay, thank goodness. I would have thought they would have been – see, and that's the thing. I think that once you're trying – they're not going to be as stringent about every little detail. They see that you're putting in the effort. Maybe your crane looked more like something else.
A flamingo.
There you go. Yeah.
I would have gone more like a chicken, really.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing wasn't going to be getting off the ground anytime soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, you made it and suddenly you were hungry.
Yeah, you were just hungry, probably. That's what it was.
That's possible. It's funny you said that about, you know, being nice to you. On the one hand, yeah, they treat you somewhat well, but on the other hand, every now and then, as part of this betrayal theme, they would come along to people and they say, "You're late. You know, you're taking too long. You're disqualified." Now, at this point, if you've been on the race race, so you've been in the race for that long, it's very possible for you to say, "Okay, fine, that's right, and I quit." But if you decided to keep going, you're still in the race. So it was just a question of seeing if you were able to, you know, to fight through that mental block and say, no, I'm not accepting the fact that you're telling me I'm disqualified. If I want to still be in the race, I will.
Wow.
And they were doing that to plenty of people. A lot of people took the option and say, okay, I'm done. And a bunch of other people said, no, the heck with it. I'm still in. I'm not done yet.
Unreal.
Yeah.
We've got about 5 minutes, Dan. Do you think we can get through to the end of the race?
Absolutely. Just the last two major parts of it. One is we ended up again, and this is when I run into you, Dave, where it's now about 48 hours in, and they give me a 60-pound bag of concrete, and I've got my pack, it's about another 35 pounds, and they say, hike up this ravine to the top of the mountain, and that was hard. I think you saw me basically breaking my back, hauling that thing up to the top.
What I couldn't believe was that you were actually moving at a pace that was much faster than most of the other competitors that I saw.
Oh, okay.
And most of them had like hardcore army tattoos, and you could tell that they were real badasses, but it's about pacing yourself, I guess.
Yeah.
And you were still able to move at quicker than an inch an hour.
Yeah.
At that point in the race. I mean, you could just, people were broken. They were completely mentally and physically broken. I'm sitting there lounging like it's a beautiful Sunday afternoon, hanging out.
It was a beautiful Sunday
my
afternoon.
My feet in the water by this gorgeous little beach, which you're telling me had a nice big bridge that was washed away by the hurricane.
That's right, yeah.
And all of the competitors have to walk across this narrow beam, which shakes all over the place as they're going across with their packs, with the concrete. And, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm having a great day. I'm smiling, I'm happy. And none of these people want anything to do with me. And then I see Dan.
This plugging away in the midst of my visual hallucinations at this point, considering that I've been up for so long. Yeah.
Then Kaufman appears out of nowhere.
I knew I was hallucinating. When would I ever see him in the forest?
That's right. I doubt he's ever been in the forest before.
I was shocked, I got to say.
Go ahead, gentlemen. I'm just listening. Please.
No, but you were really
talk like I'm not even here. Please.
You were really kind because you know what? Along the way, it's a mental game. It's as simple as that. All you have to do is be able to say no. I'm going to keep going. It's one foot in front of the other, and just keep moving. And you know, you brought me like so the Gatorade and a variety of sandwich. It doesn't make a difference what you're eating at that point, but as long as you're taking in calories, you're getting fuel one way or another. And your body starts to say, no, I'm not hungry. No, I'm not, you know, I'm not
going to bother.
Yeah,
you took like
eating.
Three bites of the sandwich and put it back in your pocket. And yeah. I thought to myself, like, there's no way you've had food in the last 12 hours.
Yeah, but your body just, you know, stops. You have to fight against it, you know. So that's
are you allowed to do that, though? Somebody could just come by and start sure. hand you food or
I'll tell you, Jay, most people there had support teams there all weekend long.
Okay.
Dan did this thing pretty much solo. I was up there for 9 or 10 hours on the Sunday. It was the day after the Montreal Baseball Project Gala.
Yeah.
And got up early in the morning and drove down there. And I would say I was there about 9, 10 hours and saw you for maybe 12 minutes.
About right.
But each time, those 3 or 4 times yeah. for 3 or 4 minutes, it was worth it.
It makes a big difference. It makes a big difference, you know, to having people supporting you and pushing along. And I was very happy to see you, Dave, there. So. Thanks.
Oh, always good to see you, Grody.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about, I believe their names are Joe and Andy, the two guys who created this monstrosity.
That's right. They're just a funny bunch of dudes, as simple as that. Joe DeSena, I think, was a former stockbroker in New York. Like I said, he'd done the Iditarod, so in doing so, I don't think he slept for 8 days and running across half of Alaska. He's climbed this whole stack of mountains. Whenever you throw a challenge at him, he says no problem. And in doing so, he's rebuilt half of Pittsfield, Vermont after the hurricane too. Andy Weinberg is just a great guy. He's a school teacher in Vermont, originally from Illinois, and a high level swimmer. This just last summer, he finished a triple Ironman. So that's 48 hours of biking, of running. I think it's like 500 kilometers of biking. It's 3 marathons. 7 miles of swimming.
Wow.
Just something absurd, yeah.
When you're saying that that's crazy,
yeah.
And you know that...
Yeah. No, trust me. He's got my respect, so...
So you're not doing the race next year. What's on tap next year?
Next year, I decided to take a break from death racing, and instead I'm going to do something called the Gobi March, and that's a 250-kilometer ultramarathon in the Gobi Desert in Inner Mongolia in China. And I am looking forward to it. So it should be a great one. It's about 40 kilometers a day. And then the fifth day or the sixth day is about an 80-kilometer run. So it should be a fun one.
How the hell are we friends?
I don't know, David. I'm starting to wonder that myself.
Dan Grudinski, congratulations again on completing the death race. We're all very proud of you. And we look forward to having you back on air as our legal correspondent soon. Rest those weary feet.
Will do. Thanks again for having me on, guys, and thanks again for your support.
Of course. I forgot the most important part. How much did you raise for the Heart and Stroke Foundation?
I did this last year. Again, this year I raised even more. It's $3,700 or so for the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Quebec, and I'll be doing the same thing again next year in advance of the Gobi March.
You'll let us know where to donate. Our listeners are very, very generous people.
There you go. Well, please go straight to the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Quebec, their website. You can donate directly, and it'll be a great donation.
Dan Grudinski, thank you so much for your time. We'll catch you very soon on the Kaufman Show.
Thanks again, guys.
Tell that story in the pub one day. You won't be leaving alone, believe me. I want to give him my phone number right now.
We'll arrange it. Jimmy's got an update. A couple more minutes for you guys to flirt before we join.
I'll do my best.
Ben Christensen at Safeco Field in Seattle. The Kaufman Show keeps rolling along. Also take morphine and swim. Take one more look at him. Oh, those yellow days. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show, Sister Mary Carr.
There's some subtle hints in that song.
Just a couple, eh? Yeah. Just a couple.
I'm not sure what she's talking about.
I think life is a baseball game.
Okay.
Yes.
And, it's as simple as that.
It is. It is.
Life is a baseball game.
I love that song. It's on Baseball's Greatest Hits from Rhino Records, one of the best baseball albums out there. It's an old compendium. I've had it for a long, long time. It's got, you know what? We'll go out on my favorite song on the, I'll give you guys all a little teaser. Stay tuned after Ben Christensen, Shaka Brody, and you will hear a dying Cubs fan's last request. Ben Christensen, are you still at Safeco, my friend?
I certainly am. The game actually literally just ended about 3 minutes ago.
Oh, our timing sucks. I'm sorry. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're great. It's been a fun night at the Kaufman Show, as always. We're having a blast. We've covered a lot of bases tonight, and we're psyched to be talking to you, as always, man.
Oh, of course. Nah, it's a pleasure to be on. A's got the win tonight, so I'm pretty stoked about that. And I'm about three beers deep right now, to be honest with you. So.
Well, yeah, but I think you can handle a little chat with us after three beers.
Oh, absolutely.
We do it every week. Don't worry about it.
Speak for yourself, Ferrar. I think if I had three beers, you'd be able to tell.
Yeah, we would.
So, Ben,
I will say they were larges. They were larges.
Oh, well, I see somebody's feeling a little frisky tonight all the way from Safeco Field in Seattle.
It's been a while.
Was this your
Northwest
first
beer? Does it for me.
Was this your first A's game of the year?
Yeah, actually it was. And it was kind of interesting that it had to be on the road here up in Seattle, but luckily, the timing couldn't be any more perfect based on the little trip that I'm about to embark on over the next, I'm going to say, what, two and a half months? And it was a good way to kick it off here in Seattle.
Has the Montreal stop on that trip been confirmed yet, Ben?
Absolutely. Well, I should be there for about a week or a week and a half. I just haven't had a chance to talk to you about that and get my trip. That's probably the key part is to ask permission to see if I can actually crash with you.
No, you're always, you know, you're welcome, man. You know, you're welcome. But I'm telling you right now that if you're coming in first week of August for Oceaga, the plan after that is to head to Fenway Park on the Monday, possibly skip the Kaufman Show and go see the Rangers play the Red Sox.
Hey, I have no problem with that.
Okay, really? I thought you would take great offense to going to a baseball game.
I know. It's a cardinal sin. I mean, really, to go to a live baseball game. Oh, my God.
And you haven't done Fenway yet, have you?
I haven't. I've never been, and I am actually really looking forward to it for a couple of reasons. One, my friend Neil, who I work with at the bar in Eugene, Max's Tavern, is from Boston, and he's going home. But second, he's actually really good friends with the Fidrich family because he went to school with Mark Fidrich's daughter in Worcester. And that's actually one of the things I'm going to do during my trip is to go to Worcester, see the old ball field where he and Mark Fidrich both played on, and meet his family.
Now, there's a picture of Mark Fidrich on your website.
It is.
Which makes for a great segue because you put up your first piece since leaving the fan cave.
Yeah, it took a while. I don't know why, but I was really happy for doing it.
I thought it was great. It gives the origin of your nickname, which, funnily enough, you said not a lot of people ask about. It was, I think, the first thing we ever asked you the first time we had you on.
Yeah, you guys were pretty quick on that one, and I was actually really surprised because most people want to go straight to, okay, what's the deal with the beard? But obviously you guys took a different impact to it and decided to ask for my Twitter handle, and I actually appreciate it more than anything.
Well, I encourage you all to check out Ben's blog. It's the website is Beard to Be Feared, and he gives the story. You can follow him on Twitter at Shaka Brody, ShakaBrodie, and he gives the story of the anonymous minor leaguer. And I mean, you do give his name, but a very compelling story about the guy who nicknamed you when you were a bat boy in Bakersfield, California.
Yeah. Well, sure, it's kind of weird that I literally haven't talked to him since the day he got cut. But the impact that he had on me and obviously as it transitioned to my adult years is really kind of strange that somebody within the baseball realm had that much of an impact on me. And I really wish I could actually go back or see him in Honolulu or whatever and thank him for it.
Well, I think you should get on that. I think you should contact the Bakersfield team, and I'm sure there's some sort of alumni relations that you could track this guy. He might have a Facebook account for all you know.
That's a good point.
Well, sometimes. So what else is going on, Ben?
Nothing. Coming back again here to Safeco tomorrow for game two of the A's Mariners game.
Nice.
And then I go to Eugene to start work on my next Major League Baseball tattoo project.
Wow. Well, I guess we'll hear about that one next week. There's some breaking news that came in about 10 minutes ago, Ben. I'd love to get your thoughts on it before we let you go. Jamie Moyer, El Viejo, the old man, has signed with the Toronto Blue Jays.
You're kidding.
Does this mean that he's about to blow his shoulder out and have surgery?
I would hope so. I mean, I...
Hold on. Ben, what are they yelling? What was just being yelled in the background there?
I don't know. they're actually yelling about the Sonics. I just read the song. They're yelling about bringing back the Seattle Supersonics to Seattle.
I thought I heard something a little askew. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, as you were.
Okay, anyway, in regards to getting more, the quick transition going from getting cut from the AAA team from the Orioles to getting signed by the Blue Jays is relatively incredible, but more importantly, I think he's got another solid year in. And if he does it with Toronto, awesome, but I think it's kind of ironic just because the Blue Jays tried to sign, or they did sign Vladimir Guerrero, who didn't pan out too well, and so it just seems to be the year of signing a bunch of old guys. I mean, you have Omar Vizquel, Vlad Guerrero, and now Jamie Moyer for the Blue Jays. And so I question what their motive is there.
I think the motivation is that the Jays' arms keep falling off. The pitching has been decimated in the last 2 weeks. I think they've lost three starters. And they need some arms right now. The funny thing about it, or the crazy thing about it, is that they're still in it. They're only, I think, 5.5 back right now.
Yeah.
It's
incredible.
It's totally clustered. I mean, I don't know if Jamie Moyer is going to make the difference, but you know the guy can throw the ball. You know he can do it. I mean, frankly, I think he'll have more success with Toronto than he would have in Colorado. That team is terrible this year.
Oh, I agree. The best years that Jamie Moyer ever had were in the American League, and with the exception of the 2008 series season when he obviously won a World Series with the Phillies, but still he had, became the first 20-game winner age 40-plus, and so for him to go back or go to Toronto actually doesn't seem like a bad idea at all.
Well, we'll see what happens. Hopefully...
They are sending him straight to Las Vegas.
Okay, good.
So yeah, they are, literally.
No single A for Jamie Moyer. But no, he was in AAA with Baltimore, and they had offered him another start, and he asked for his release. So, fingers crossed, right?
Somebody tweeted it's going to be the first time that he's pitched for the Blue Jays since their inaugural game in 1977. So...
Ben Christensen, live in Seattle. Tweet with him at Shaka Brody, SHAKABRODIE. And enjoy the ball games, my friend. And do give me a call off air, and we'll figure out your plans for Montreal.
No, I definitely will. And hopefully the background noise, provided a good segue of conversation for you guys.
Absolutely, Ben. No problems at all.
All right, take care.
Catch you soon.
There's no shortage of background noise every time we talk to Ben, is there?
No, it's true. There's always
somebody's
something.
Yelling about something.
Yeah, I think he just brings that out in people.
He does.
Can we listen to a little fair bit of Steve Goodman's A Dying Cub Fan's Last Request? This might be the best baseball song ever written. And as I say that, I think Anakin Slade, Expo's song. I think this. I kind of think Glory Days a bit, but... not as much.
Yeah, a little retrospect.
An old Cub fan lay dying.
Love this song. This is The Kaufman Show. Enjoy.
In his midnight hour, the toll. Around his bed, his friends had all gathered. They knew his time was short. And on his head, they put this bright blue cap from his all-time favorite sport. He told him, it's late, it's getting dark in here. And I know it's time to go. But before I leave the lineup, boys, there's just one thing that I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago? when baseball season rolls around. When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League. Told his friends, you know the law of averages says anything will happen that can. That's what it says. But the last time the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. The Cubs made me a criminal, sent me down a wayward path. They stole my youth from me, that's the truth. I'd forsake my teachers to go sit in the bleachers in flagrant truancy. And then one thing led to another, and soon I discovered alcohol, gambling, dope, football, hockey, lacrosse, tennis. But what do you expect when you raise up a young boy's hopes and then just crush him like so many paper beer cups, year after year after year, after year after year after year after year after year, till those hopes are just so much popcorn for the pigeons beneath the L tracks to eat. He said, you know, I'll never see Wrigley Field anymore before my eternal rest. So if you have your pencils and your scorecards ready, I'll read you my last request. He said, give me a doubleheader funeral in Wrigley Field on some sunny weekend day, no lights. Have the organ play the national anthem, and then a little na-na-na-na, hey-hey-hey, goodbye. Make six bullpen pitchers carry my coffin, and six groundskeepers clear my path. Have the umpires bark me out at every base all their holy wrath. It's a beautiful day for a funeral. Hey, Ernie, let's play too. Somebody go get Jack Brickhouse to come back and conduct just one more interview. Have the Cubbies run right out into the middle of the field. Have Keith Moreland drop a routine fly. Give everybody two bags of peanuts and a frosty malt, and I'll be ready to die. Build a big fire on home plate out of your Louisville Slugger baseball bats and toss my coffin in. Let my ashes blow in a beautiful snow from the prevailing 30-mile-an-hour southwest wind. When my last remains go flying over the left field wall, we'll bid the bleacher bums adieu. I will come to my final resting place out on Waveland Avenue. The Dying Man's friends told him to cut it out. They said, stop it, that's an awful shame. He whispered, don't cry, we'll meet by and by near the Heavenly Hall of Fame. He said, I've got season's tickets to watch the Angels now. So that's just what I'm gonna do. But you, the living, you're stuck here with the Cubs. So it's me to feel sorry for you. He said, oh, play that Lonesome Losers tune. That's the one I like the best. Closed his eyes and slipped away. Well, Scotty, it was the Dying Cub fans' last request. So here it is. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls? The Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground. When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League.
I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. This is The Kaufman Show, and we'll be right back. And we're back. To use the famous words of somebody a lot better at this than me, we're running out of racetrack here on the Kaufman Show, Jay.
Plenty of racetrack.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then let's take a call.
Okay.
Let's open the phone lines.
Okay.
Let's take a bunch of calls.
Okay.
Or as many as, you know, want to call.
As many as we can. Because we're running out of racetrack.
Supposedly. I don't know. Somebody said that.
Yeah.
Let's go to Travis and let's give you all the numbers. 514-790-0990. If you're out of town, 1-866-896-2546. Good evening, Travis.
The Expos post game show.
We wish it was.
It was last week. I don't know. This week we've been very Expos light, but I think that's okay.
Dave Zirin should come on more, I think.
Oh, do you think? Yeah. I'm blown away that we got him twice in 2 weeks.
It's awesome.
Yeah, he's the man, eh?
It is. Yeah, he is. And what makes me happy is that this week has been somewhat justicial in sports, a little bit.
A little bit.
Heat win.
Excuse me?
The Zombie Sonics lost.
Well, the Zombie Sonics lost, but really it felt like the Zombie Sonics behind the Heat bench were the real winners in all of this.
I agree.
Who those guys spent over $10,000 each to get down there and get into the building. God knows what they spent on makeup. And all I could think was, oh, God, am I going to have to dress as a Zombie Expos fan in Washington in October?
Yes.
Oh, no.
No.
No. You see, I've had this debate with another friend, and my initial reaction, because I'm mentally preparing myself for the Nationals to make the playoffs, and, you know, with my little pulpit that I have, I'll try and prepare all of you as well that are, you know, feeling all kind of weird about it. Part of me wants to go hide in the bush. Like they used to do when the war was coming and they didn't want to go fight the war. Like, I want to go somewhere without internet, hide out at a cabin during the playoff just so I can avoid it. And then part of me thinks I want to see it. I want to be there. I want to be in Washington and watch this happen. And I don't know. I think there's a happy medium between both. It probably involves sitting at your pub and watching it, but not remembering it in the morning.
I don't see them as the Expos at all. I don't even see
either,
a remote connection to it.
Well, I see a remote connection. I think it's pretty obvious what the remote connection is, and that's that the franchise.
Just let me tell myself that.
Right. But I vacillate a lot. Jay, you know this, Travis, I'm sure. I mean, you're one of our regulars, and you know that I want to be like, yeah, it's okay. The Nationals are a good team. They're a young team. They're exciting to watch. It's still hard. There's still a part of this that doesn't make it okay. And one of the things, there was this, I'm just about to call it terrible, but only terrible because of my point of view and how one-sided it is. There was an article written by Ian Mendes. It was in the Ottawa Citizen, and it was talking about your first-place Montreal Expos, how the Montreal Expos are in first place in the National League East. And I can't get behind that. I acknowledge that there is a tie between the franchise that used to exist in Montreal and picked up and moved to Washington. Yeah, the players are different. The management's different. The ownership's different. I don't think that the Expos would have ever been able to sign a Steven Strasburg or a Bryce Harper. I think those guys would have said that no amount of money was good enough for them. What am I going to do in October? I don't know, Travis. I really don't know if I should go down there or not. I don't know if it would be good for my mental
health. Why would you go down there? I don't get it. I mean, it's like watching, you're an old Washington Senators fan, and now you're going to go see the Minnesota Twins win. I think it's been long enough that there's really no connection between the teams. None of the players are left. The organization is completely different. It's in another city. The only remnants there is that Dawson and Carter numbers up on the stadium.
That's a pretty big thing.
And empty seats.
And empty seats, yeah. Had to get that one in.
What gets me, what I don't like, is that now that the team is good, now they say former Montreal Expos
franchise.
Now all of a sudden, you know, like how you watch the NBA Finals this year and they talk about the last time the Thunder franchise won the NBA championship.
79.
Yeah.
But no.
No.
Well, luckily there isn't a World Series for them to mention with the Nationals when they do make the World Series.
What would get me, though, is if somehow this year they find a way to just blow it. And it goes back. And I wonder if they would try to say, well, we were the best team in baseball in 1994.
Oh, man.
Well, if you do that,
we're going to be dealing with this all summer long. I mean, you know, I check the box scores every morning when I wake up, and a lot of it is to see if the Nationals are still in first place. And they are.
And are you rooting for them?
No.
Okay.
No, but I'm, you know what? I'm rooting for the Mets.
Okay.
And it's not going to happen because the Mets have been playing above their heads all season long.
And haven't you suffered enough?
Pardon?
Haven't you suffered enough? Don't get involved with the Mets.
Yeah, really.
I can't go back some championship franchise. I just can't do it. It's not in my DNA. It doesn't feel right. I'm waiting for my buddy Max Harris to be hired by the San Francisco Giants and become their general manager. And when that happens, I will become a Giants fan. Until then, I'm still a free agent.
Fair enough.
Travis, we wish you a wonderful night. We're going to wrap up our show a little bit on the early side tonight.
Yeah.
Which is the, it's actually the side that we're supposed to end it at.
Well, we had a cluster of guests, of interesting ones.
We did.
We
can thank Jay Onright.
Yes, we can.
We can. Who was awesome. And yes, I will go have a Labatt Saint-Gant in his honor after work. Actually, no, you know what? I've got a case of Steam Whistle at home. I was in Ottawa last week.
Of what? I'm sorry?
Steam Whistle.
I'm not aware.
I'll bring you one next week.
Okay.
We will celebrate after the show with
I'll
a
take
Steam
it.
Whistle.
It's, a Steam Whistle?
The Steam Whistle Brewery is right...
Is another Willie Nelson reference?
No. It's across the street from the Sky Dome is the brewery. It's a premier pilsner from Ontario.
Okay.
And, yeah, I got a nice case at home.
A premier pilsner.
Yes. How alliterative.
Okay.
All right. Onright. Onright.
Onright.
Onright.
Mm-hmm. Zirin.
Dave Zirin, thank you so much for dropping in again. And as he said, he's part of the family now. We have that Ellis Island connection, obviously.
I'll take him. I want him to be my father.
Mark DeYoung, who we're all very proud of, is going to kick some ass on behalf of Canada.
Best of luck to him.
In 30 days, London 2012 will be on CTV, on TSN. And we'll be talking about it here. We got to get Nick Makrisinaris back in studio to talk about it. Dan Gradinsky, you nut. Thanks, Grody. Great to have you in studio. Ben Christensen, Shaka Brody. Follow him on Twitter. Experience, the most passionate baseball fan I know. John Kakalakis, thank you for editing. Jimmy G, thank you for producing. Jay Farrar, just thanks for being so damn good looking.
Well, you get to stare at me for a few hours every week. How you like that, buddy?
It's fun, man. It's fun. There's nobody I'd rather be doing this with. So.
Me neither, my friend.
You going to let Joel Plaskett sing a little, or might as well.
Yeah, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here.
This is the Kaufman Show. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. Do you hold a grudge anyway? Because it's fun. Davey and me, face down in our soup, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman. We'll be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?